Hey, Anna, did you know it only takes like 8 minutes to get up into space?
8 minutes?
That's it.
That's like the easiest commute ever.
I know. They strap you into a rocket, and then 8 minutes later, you're up into space. That's all it takes.
Wow.
But it's a little jarring. I mean, you go from zero to 17,000 miles an hour in those 8 minutes. So the acceleration is like ridiculous.
Sounds terrifying.
As you're strapped into this rocket.
Off you go.
Hurtling 17,000 miles an hour. But 8 minutes, you're already up there.
Yeah.
By 12 minutes, you're circling the Earth and you're, you're floating freely in weightlessness.
Wow.
So an 8 minute commute, you're up for it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 12 minutes, technically.
Well,
let's be real. To get around, I want to be orbiting.
Well, that's true. And then you finish
and weightless,
your first
ideally. Weightless, I'd like to get to be weightless.
That would be good. I know. That's like when you're driving over the bridge from Kentucky to Ohio.
Exactly.
8 minutes, except you'll be up in space.
I'm not going 17,000 miles an hour. My husband thinks I am, but I'm.
I don't know. Not. I've seen some speeding tickets. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, this is Looking Up, and I'm Dean Regas.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and while Dean's looking up, I help bring astronomy down to Earth with lots of questions for him, being as he's a real-life astronomer. In this episode, we're very fortunate to welcome NASA Commander Scott Kelly, the man who has spent over 520 days in space.
Wow, 520 days.
That's crazy.
Oh my goodness.
I can't. I mean, the fact that we can live in space, I mean, he could live there for it was a year at one point. I mean, it makes you think like how far we've come. Doesn't it make you, don't you think wistfully about like, wow, we've come so far?
I do. I mean, here he was living in the space station.
That's
and
crazy.
Then we go back to the beginning of space travel. I mean, we just had the 60th anniversary of Sputnik's launch.
That's right.
The first unmanned
huge
satellite.
Deal.
And then November, this month, we're having the 60th anniversary of the first life form that circled the Earth, and that is the dog Laika. The Soviet Union launched
a
spacecraft. I know, Laika is my favorite space dog.
There are many space dogs.
Well, there are lots of space dogs.
But Laika, I agree, she deserves.
The first one,
right?
Yeah, it is a she, yeah. So she orbited around the Earth, and so the Soviet Union liked to use dogs for their test pilots instead of, we like to use monkeys.
Monkeys,
yes.
Yeah.
And so there was Laika was the first, but the ones that I think are the most famous maybe now would be Belka and Strelka.
Yeah.
Two dogs that went up in space, circled the Earth, and they made it back.
And they lived.
Yes. Laika, unfortunately, did not survive.
That's why
trip.
She's such a hero.
I know. I know.
I love the names Belka and Strelka, too. I think they're very cool.
Yeah.
It's like fun Russian names.
I have heard that they are stuffed and on display in a Russian museum. That you can go see them in person.
And pet them?
No, I think they're probably behind glass.
I got excited.
Lenin could be there, and they're next to him on both sides. I don't think that's it. That doesn't sound right. But anyway, check it out. I might be right.
But the
other mission that gets me from the past is called Zond 5.
It sounds very like sci-fi.
I know. This is another Soviet Union mission.
Okay.
And we think of like Neil Armstrong, first person to the moon, and Buzz Aldrin. And then maybe even before that, there was Apollo 8 where the Americans went around the backside of the moon. But the first creatures to see the backside of the moon were actually Soviet animals.
Really?
They had a mission that was manned. Well, I don't know if manned is the right word, but the tortoise. Because there were tortoises. It was tortoised. It had tortoises, mealworms, and flies.
Ew.
And they flew around the backside of the moon.
The flies flew,
The flies flew, and then they flew back home and landed safely on Earth. So the first creatures.
Did the turtle make it, too?
The turtles all made it, too.
I can't handle a story with the animal not. Okay,
exactly.
So good. Okay, great.
And so, I mean, that mission, I never learned about that one in school.
Amazing.
But you think, so the space turtles. They went around the Earth and came back.
I'm going to start a band and I'm going to call it Space Turtles.
Space Turtles.
That's right. Our lead song will be Space Turtles.
That's right. Did you find one? There was a dog that came back and didn't they give it to somebody? You remember that story?
Yeah, I did. I found that I don't know what mission it was, because there's actually been a lot of animals in space. I did not realize. But they, I guess Nikita Khrushchev gave one of the dogs that went into space to Caroline Kennedy, I believe it was.
Yeah, or the puppy of one of the dogs that came from space.
And so she had a space dog.
I know, isn't that cool? I mean, it's like great reaching across from the Cold War and our space race, and they shared puppy dogs.
Puppies are the great unifier. Who doesn't love puppies?
That's true. When we talked about this mission, ladies and gentlemen, Anna really brightened up about this one. I want to talk all about dogs, the whole thing.
I do. I'm open to monkeys, too. There were some monkeys that we said, I'm an equal opportunity animal lover, but yeah, dogs I get really excited
That's
about.
True.
They're so cute and cuddly and snuggly.
Well, and since we have to get up to humans at some point, we've got to talk to Scott Kelly here, which is
exciting.
By the way, I have never met an actual astronaut in person.
I was going to say I haven't either, but of course I haven't. I'm surprised you haven't.
I don't know. I'm going to be a little nervous.
Are you going to be like, are you going to play it cool?
I mean,
you play it cool.
I'll try.
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, yeah. What'd you do? It was space. That sounds all right. I don't know what I'm going to. I'm going to be kind of nervous. What are you going to ask him? What do you want to ask an astronaut?
Nothing. I'm not going to embarrass myself. I'm just going to sit here silently and let you do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm expecting him to come in with a flight suit and the helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Everything.
And like, for sure. Like a slow-mo walk.
with music.
Be really cool. Yeah.
Right, we got to get the right stuff.
We do.
In.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
I want to ask him about, like, is it fun to do like flips and stuff? I feel like I see some cool videos of like, you know, weightlessness and like, and I also want to ask what it feels like, and I'm sure he'll have some interesting thoughts about how to readjust.
Oh yeah,
when you come back,
like, I know.
I don't know.
He's up there for a year in weightless conditions.
Right. I'd be like, why am I so damn heavy? This is crazy.
That's right. And things like, you know, if you're like writing with a pen, you just like leave the pen there and it floats. But then if you do it on Earth, it's just gonna drop.
Yeah.
And be like, oh man, again.
This place sucks.
This is gravity thing.
Right. I did see a video of an astronaut washing her hair in space.
Oh.
It was crazy.
Dry shampoo or what?
She had like dry shampoo, but then she had to use water. She had to catch the water as she tried to put on her scalp and then catch the water and put it back on her hair because she had long blonde hair.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just really interesting, those kinds of mundane things that we don't think about.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, man. We got so many questions. He's never going to get out of here. We asked so many questions.
That's a good point. He'll want to leave, though. He'll be like, okay, you guys need to calm
That's enough.
Down. We're so excited, though.
Enough about the showers and the
That's right.
bathroom and the toilet. And that's what I want to ask him. But anyway.
Do you really?
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's totally disgusting.
It has to be.
All right. Well, anyway.
We'll find out, I guess.
But you know, back when I was a kid, you know, who I really
idolized.
Yeah,
who was your favorite? That's what I was wondering. Like, I know Scott's amazing.
Yeah.
NASA commander. But who was, like, growing up your favorite?
John Glenn. Hands down, John Glenn.
Not Neil Armstrong.
I know.
I'm not judging him.
I'm sorry. It had to be. I don't know what it was about. Just like his mission, like, he was the first American to orbit the Earth. And he just had this, like, I don't know, his way about him. I thought he was just, like, the coolest guy.
And he did so many cool things in his life. I feel like after, you know, he really was an everyman.
That's right.
Renaissance man.
Yeah, because after he orbited the Earth, then he came and was in politics. And was senator from Ohio and all this stuff.
And wasn't he the oldest person to go back into space?
And then he went back into space.
That's so
crazy.
Too.
That's right. At 70 something, he went back up into space again.
I feel like that's huge. And at 70 something, I'm going to be in. Oof, I'm not sure I'm going to be in the right shape to do that.
Not the right stuff. You'll be in the.
That's right. I'll be like, we'll just leave her here.
And that would have been cool to ask him about, you know, the difference, because going up in that first flight, I mean, that had to have been, I mean, it was probably quick. I mean, it wasn't very long that he was up, but I think he orbited three times.
Okay.
And then going back again in a probably bigger spacecraft. I mean, going from that little one, you're strapped into this tiny little capsule for a couple hours and then to be able to actually float and move around. Oh, man. Yeah. So he was always my hero.
He is pretty cool. I can see that. I can see that for sure.
Well, Anna and I are super excited to welcome our guest here today. He is a veteran of four space flights, commanded three expeditions to the International Space Station, and has spent over 520 days living in space. And he's just released his memoir entitled Endurance, A Year in Space, A Lifetime of Discovery. Well, Scott, thanks so much for joining us here today, back on Earth. I'm so glad to have you here. So a year in space, I just have to ask, when they threw this out at you, was there any part of you that said, No, I can't do a year in space.
All parts of me.
All parts, body and mind.
You know, initially I wasn't too keen on the idea because I had recently, you know, within a year, I think, gotten back from being in space for 6 months, which is a really long time to be in space. So I wasn't interested. But, you know, after thinking about it, I knew I wanted to fly in space again. And the fact that this was going to be more than twice as long, which to me meant more than twice as challenging. And then eventually I kind of warmed up to the idea.
Really? And because I was reading in your book, Endurance, you were talking about one of your last days, you took your last shower on Earth. To be honest, I think the appreciating showers, I think, is really important for it. Because in the space station, there's no shower.
Yeah, there's no shower or sink or bathtub.
How do you keep clean then?
You just, you know, put some soap and water on a towel. We actually have little packages that are they're wash. I forget what they're called, but they're towels that you add water to. We have water on the space station. Then you just rub the dirt around, and it makes you think you're cleaner than you were.
Well, I guess
just like new.
I guess there's nice fewer fresh people up there to impress, right? I mean, there's
Yeah, you're all in it together.
What was the maximum occupancy of the space station when you were there?
This last time I was there, we had 9 people on board. My previous flight, one time we had 12. A shuttle came up and there were 12 of us. That's the most I've ever been in space with.
Wow.
Wow.
And so how did you adjust to the microgravity?
I adjust pretty well. You know, I think everyone gets nauseous to some extent. I've never thrown up in space. Some people do. It takes a while, though. And it's a progressive thing. The longer you're there, the more comfortable you feel. And I found that even after, you know, 340 days, I still felt a little bit of improvement as time went on.
Yeah, I think people are really fascinated by the hygiene also in space. I mean, it doesn't sound like it's the most glamorous of accommodations that you have there. And how do you keep it clean? How do you – I hate to ask the space toilet question, but I have to ask the space toilet question. Is it really, really bad?
No, you get used to it. You can get used to anything. It's but it is a complicated piece of machinery that – takes some care in feeding.
to keep
working. But it's important. If we have 2 toilets on the space station, and if you were to break both of them, you're coming home, you know, pretty soon.
I read that, and I was out of all the things that could scrub a mission, if the 2 toilets fail, you're back down.
Eventually you would be. I mean, we have some other contingency things we can do. Each Soyuz has a small toilet kind of device that you could use for a while. We have bags you might be able to use for a while, but eventually you'd run out of those and you would have to come home. Unlike on Earth, if your toilet breaks, you could run to your neighbor's house or find a tree.
That's right.
Couldn't they send like a space plumber? Wait, no. Plumber is probably not really a...
No, I'm a space plumber.
Oh, there you go.
I'm probably one of the most experienced space plumbers in the history of plumbing.
There you go.
Unclog more toilets and from this side to...
I appreciate that. Got to be resourceful. Yeah.
There could have been.
Yeah, not only were you the plumbers, you're the electrician, you're the mechanic, you're the IT person, you're the doctor, the dentist, the scientist. I mean, you got to do everything.
Right. I mean, you were drawing your own blood. You were doing experiments. And you had to work with folks from around the country, around the world. What was your experience working with the Russian cosmonauts?
Oh, they're great guys and been great partners in space and, you know, lifelong friends, very, you know, professional. Different culture, clearly, but, you know, one of the great things about the space station is that it's an international space station. It allows 2 countries that were formerly and sometimes now at odds with one another to work together cooperatively in a peaceful mission in a place that is a common ground to us all.
Yeah. And so you did training with NASA and the Russian Space Agency. What were the some of the differences between the two?
So the goal of our our training for flying in space is that we can safely operate the equipment and meet the mission objectives. The Russians have a little bit different approach. You know, NASA, I think, oftentimes is, you know, more practical about how to train us to do things. And I use the example of mailing a package. If NASA was going to train you to mail a package, they would say, hey, take this box. Here's some money. Go down to the post office, slap an address on it, give them the money, postage, and that's how you mail a package. If you were being taught how to do this in Russia, the Russian Space Agency, they would start with, you know, where the tree is cut down mm-hmm. to make the pulp, and then they would go into detail about box making. A couple days later, you would get to the part where you actually go into the post office. And maybe not a couple of days.
And who planted the tree and yeah. whose land that was on.
Both effective.
Right.
One a little bit more efficient.
Right, right. And the other thing I noticed is that there's some good flowery language in the book. And you've had some experience. So who is the best at cussing? Navy pilots, astronauts, or Russian cosmonauts? Who has the best curse words?
Russian cosmonauts.
Hands down?
Yeah, the Russian language takes cursing to a whole new level.
Really?
They actually have a separate Russian. They kind of refer to it as a separate language called Mat.
Yeah.
Which means mother.
Oh.
And that's their curse slang.
Their curse language mother. Is called mother.
So you could tell when they were frustrated by something because you had sort of got familiar with some of their special words.
Yeah, it's culturally it's different, though.
Well, and so you had multiple visitors as you're up there during your year. You had some crews come and go. What was it like to see people head back down that were up there with you?
You know, on one hand, you're sorry to see these people go that you've shared this extraordinary experience with, their friends, colleagues. But at the same time, I kind of used the arrival and departure and arrival of people as like a milestone that I'm kind of getting through this mm-hmm. year. So when, you know, you kind of have mixed feelings. Sorry to see him go, but happy that someone else will be coming up soon, new mm-hmm. people. They will leave. Eventually, you get to the point where the next person that leaves is me and Misha.
Yep. Yeah, because you were doing this with another Russian cosmonaut was doing the same whole year.
Yeah.
You were up there for the same amount of time and everything.
My Russian brother from another mother.
That's right. That's right. And you guys will be forever linked, right?
Yeah,
And so then when you came back to Earth, what was the, you know, we always say gravity is a harsh mistress. Did it really, really knock you out?
Yeah, we have some other phrases that I'm not going to use.
Some more Russian ones. From Mott. All right, we'll look that up.
But yeah, gravity, when you haven't been around it for a long time, gives you a beat down
right.
initially.
In the book, you kind of say that, well, you felt like you could have gone to work that day when you landed. Maybe not. Did it affect you a little later, maybe, right?
It depends on what you would be asked to do. Like okay. immediately, I wouldn't want to like build a habitat or mm-hmm. go and fly a, you know, some like hovercraft around the surface of Mars. But, you know, the longer here's the other thing too, though. Mars' gravity is less than the Earth too. So the
right.
effects would not be as significant as coming back to Earth. But, you know, within a few hours, I think you're pretty functional.
Yeah.
If you had to do something.
Well, one of the other stories I like about your last chapter, you kind of talk about you know, the things that you appreciate more down on here on Earth. And the part that kind of struck me was that you're now constantly telling people how much you appreciate them. And that it kind of – at least the way you wrote it said, yeah, I'm always telling people how much I like them and care for them. and you're kind of freaking people out apparently.
Well, I wouldn't say always.
Okay. All right. So not
that's
always.
Maybe a little bit of an exaggeration.
All right. Okay.
But yeah, you do you know, spending that amount of time in space definitely changes, I think, a lot of people. There's this thing we refer to as an orbital perspective or overview effect where you – look out at Earth and you can see the fragility of the atmosphere. Consciously you're aware that there's a lot of conflict down on the planet despite how beautiful it looks in most places. And, you know, it makes everyone, you know, kind of you kind of feel like, hey, we're all in this together, flying through space on this spaceship Earth. And we need to do a little bit a better job of taking care of each other and our common problems.
Well, that's all we have to do. We just have to send all the world leaders up in space for a little while.
Misha would say to me occasionally, he says, you know, if we want our countries to solve their issues, we just need to send our two presidents to space together for a year.
Sounds good. Sounds good. We should work approach. On that. I think that would work very well. Well, Scott, thanks so much for talking with us today. This has been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, as you can imagine, with all the outreach talks that Dean gives and all the kids who come visit at the Cincinnati Observatory, we get lots of great kid questions. And some of them are probably questions that parents would like to ask, but they don't. And sometimes just kids have some crazy fun questions.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we should answer one now. What do you think?
All right. So this is a kid question or an adult question?
This is a kid question.
It's posing as a kid question.
This is from a six-year-old.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Six-year-old. I hope I can do this.
I know. I'm like,
they're pretty smart. They might be smarter than me.
Well, okay. No comment. Okay. So this question is, so when Commander Kelly was on the space station and doing his time in space, how many miles away was he from the moon?
Ooh, okay.
Like what, you know, you don't have to give an exact number. I'll give you a pass, but like give some, you know.
Yeah, that's a pretty good, that's a common question. We send astronauts up into space and we think, okay, well, they're going way, way out there. They're going way out in space. They're like a part of the way to the moon. Well, not quite. When they go up in space.
It all feels like way, way out there, though.
Come I know. I mean, it's still farther than I've gone, but yeah, it's the astronauts in the space station are usually around between 200 and 250 miles above the Earth.
Oh.
So that's like the distance from Cincinnati to Cleveland. That's as far up in space as they are. And so going to the moon, though, is 240,000 miles. So
240,000?
240,000. And so they're up 200 miles.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's 1/1200th of the way.
Yeah.
So they are not that far up in towards the moon. So I can actually tell you, yeah, they're 200 miles closer to the moon than we are. That's about it. It's not that far, but
it all just seems like it's so far out there. It's hard to get a relative proximity.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah. And so that's what makes that mission, you know, for Neil Armstrong to go all the way to the moon such a big deal. And for the tortoises, that was a big deal for tortoises to get all the way out to the moon and back. It was a huge deal.
Those tortoises really were talented to get
all the way
out
farther
there.
Than us, that's for sure.
Oh my gosh! So that's true.
Yeah. So, but that's
I guess
what
that is true. Yeah.
Just to get up to orbit. Yeah. Remember, it doesn't take very long to get up there. So it's one of those things that's these giant rockets sending you up to there to break free of the gravity of the Earth takes a tremendous amount of force, and then to get you up to 17,000 miles an hour, that's what it's all about. That's why Scott Kelly did it.
That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Again, a huge thanks to NASA Commander Scott Kelly, author of Endurance, for joining us. His book is available online or at local bookstores. And we want you to get in touch with us. We are on Twitter at Looking Up Podcast, or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
You can ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask an astronomer or scientist, and we'll try to answer it on future episodes.
And if you listen to Looking Up on iTunes, please subscribe to the show and take a moment to rate or comment on us there. You can also catch Looking Up on Stitcher or from wvxu.org/lookingup. Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Rick Andrus is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provided additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.